You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Atamarie e te whānau, kei te whakarongo mai nei ki te reo irirangi pōho. You're on the 95 BFM Breakfast Show. We're about to listen to some disaster radio, and we'll be chatting with Luke Rowell about a couple of very special projects he's been working on under both the disaster radio umbrella and the eyeliner world as well. So stick around. That is Disaster Radio with Drop the Bomb. That's from Charisma, which came out in 2010. And on the line, we've got Luke Rowell, a.k.a. Disaster Radio. Hello, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Auckland.
Hey.
I'm good. I've already had two coffees to get myself set up, and then that little quick tune this morning. Hoi.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a caffeinated track if ever there was one. I haven't listened to this album for ages, but I've been really enjoying, I guess, revisiting it, because you've been working on some very interesting projects with the National Library. Do you want to tell us a wee bit about what you've been getting up to? Because this is a very cool archive kind of world you've been diving into.
Yeah, it's kind of a complicated new sort of thing we've been working on together with the National Libraries. I was talking to them for a while about doing an archive project of my albums, and we've had to sort of come up with a whole system to archive digital audio, born digital works as a kind of storehouse of all of the stems and MIDI effect and MIDI and the audio with the effects and all this
wow.
stuff that goes on with the digital audio sessions making the tunes, but also I've done all these videos of me showing the working of all of the technical and creative side of things. So there's no standards for any of this kind of archive work, so we're working on in a sort of esoteric domain of knowledge with this electro pop music, and then kind of archiving stuff that's, because I don't use hardware, I use all software, so it's easily archivable, but once it stops working, it really stops working. So
true.
We're trying to take a sort of snapshot of it working on this old Windows system, and then, you know, so we can bring it forward for things like researchers and the education sector and fans and remixes. So it's all available as Creative Commons, non-commercial.
That's so cool.
License. Yeah, so it's two records, for Charisma, as you said, and Eyeliner's By Now.
Yes.
So yeah, I kind of grew up with like the internet being the storehouse of knowledge and sort of sharing ideas and talking through, you know, early synthesizer software stuff with my friends, and the kind of building this notion of open access and kind of sharing out all the things that I've discovered as a musician in the last 20 years, you know, giving that out for free is something that I've been thinking about for a long time.
You know? I think it's a really generous project, but I think you're right as well. It comes from, it feels like quite a natural step from somebody who's been so informed by the internet in their own music making to kind of find a way to have it looked after, because I think we're all sort of starting to get a little bit more clued up to the, you know, potential impermanence of the internet. You know, it feels like a thing that'll be there forever, but you know, you never actually know what's going to happen. Things can get lost online. It's good to have somebody who's going to be looking after it, and that's, I guess, what the National Library Archive does in a way. What are you actually putting into the archive? Break it down for us. What is in the Luke Rowell archive now?
So we've got multi-track recordings of all the stems for Eyeliner's By Now and Charisma. So that's every single track, like the kick drum and the bass line and, you know, every vocal layer. So that's, you're looking at like 30 stems per song at 24-bit. And then each set of stems has effects on it or no effects. So there's kind of a dry version. So you could actually download all the stems from all the songs in Charisma and hear the dry vocals that I've recorded before the vocoders. So you can see just how bad a singer I am. And then also the MIDI files, which is kind of funny because it was the first time putting MIDI files into like a state archive. But it was kind of cool, you know, these sort of Windows era, like dinky little music things. So yeah, just, and that's, and also these videos that I've made of, there's sort of half an hour of me talking about, very self-indulgently talking about the tunes, and they're all actually digested on YouTube as well. So
that's so good.
Yeah, it's just everything we could think of in a way that would be openly accessible till the end of time. So not the actual recording session files themselves, but a version that we can always access.
Yes.
So there's no sort of DRM involved with the file types.
That's so cool. And I think that's really interesting as well, because if you want to learn, you know, an instrument, a classical instrument, there's lots of places you can start. If you want to start a rock band, there's lots of sort of, I guess, established ways of doing that. But there is still a big old gap in the education and the knowledge around how do you start like a project that is based around software or that comes out of software. You kind of just have to get into it in your own way. And I think that this is an interesting thing, because you're actually giving people a little bit of a textbook or a little bit of a conversation starter, at least, for how you got into this space. When you think back to, I guess, getting into using, I guess, electronic production methods and software as a way of making music, what was it that sort of kicked that into gear for you, Luke?
There was a book at Lower Hutt Libraries that I would get out as a kid. I got it out when I was like 8 or 9. The Complete Guide to Synthesizers by Devarahi is this bearded kind of 70s dude. It was a really great picture of him on the back. But yeah, it was down to like a few like textbooks in the kind of early 90s. And it's, yeah, it's that exactly as you said with the domain of electronic music. The knowledge is very like specific and unique per producer. So I did go to music school, and we did a lot of theory around sonic art and acousmatic music and stuff like that, but I also had a foot in this kind of pop camp. So as you said, like I had to sort of acknowledge that I never feel like I have a full grasp of like musicology or musicianship terms, but I attempted to describe it all on my own terms, and that was kind of like quite empowering to go like, oh, you know, it is my, I can speak on my own authority about my own stuff. And you know, kind of building my own language around stuff, even though I'm using the terms wrong, it's like I'm trying to transmit this knowledge that hasn't sort of been encapsulated in a nice way, you know, a sort of convention.
Totally.
It's interesting that you picked up on that.
I think another thing that it struck me about this project is that it must have been quite a trip to go back and listen to these things with a lens to pulling it apart a wee bit, because it's been nearly 12 years, I think, you know, that since the disaster radio one that we're talking about here. You know, that's a long time. Did you find it sort of strange to try and get back into the headspace of what you were doing when you were making that, or was it quite an easy thing?
It was. There was some stuff that I was sort of looking at, and this is getting quite, you know, very sort of specific, but, you know, for instance, like the post-apocalyptic imagery, I was, you know, sort of thinking for the last 10 years that the idea of a post-apocalypse is a very sort of Western, you know, white notion and popular culture, and I put down all those sort of ideas about the apocalypse as a kind of, you know, I do discuss it in one of the screencasts, and also this the tune Computer Whiz about, you know, this kind of Revenge of the Nerds plot line, which, you know, I thought about for a long time, and I was like, now we're in a different phase of kind of like evil nerds on the internet, and I'm like, you know, yeah, so some of the kind of more like quasi-political sort of parts of it I was a bit cringed at, but it was kind of nice to open up and see like there's some, you know, latent sort of musicological ideas that became other things later on. That was quite pleasurable to sort of see, go totally. Back and, you know, while I was recording these videos in real time and go, oh, actually this part, you know, became this other thing in eyeliner.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So yeah, also very self-indulgent, you know, but you got to kind of put that aside to get the work done, you know.
It's with a kind of altruistic purpose, though, because you're creating educational tools for the masses here, so you're diving into your own psyche for the greater good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can hear me sort of confusing myself a lot in those screencasts, but
Well, let's talk about the eyeliner world now. I mean, you've also got eyeliner, as we've just mentioned, in this Creative Commons project too, but you've also just put out a really brilliant video for Drop Shadow, which was created with a long time collaborator of yours and old mate Simon Ward. Tell us a little bit about the process of making this, and maybe also describe it for people who haven't actually watched the video yet.
Okay, so yeah, the title track to Drop Shadow, I did put out the record 2 years ago, but we just put out a double vinyl of the album through Orange Milk Records. Simon wanted to make a video for the new eyeliner, and we had some time coming up, so I tend to give Simon all the creative control. I said, you make the call. He knows, I trust him so innately. His vision is so beautiful. But I said as the album progresses, the album goes from a kind of a morning to a midnight, and then Drop Shadow is this kind of peak sort of party sound. And when I was working on it in back home in New Zealand, I then took the track to Hong Kong, where I was for the last 2 years. I've only just got back.
Mm-hmm.
There's this kind of subterranean thing going on, and I put all these subway sounds into the track before I left New Zealand. I got to Hong Kong and I realized it was exactly the same sort of subway sound. So I said to Simon, it's got this kind of subterranean party, it's got this kind of weird sort of, and we looked at things like Fraggle Rock and the Trapdoor and all these kind of more sort of kids animation styles. So we got on board my buddy, and a lot of Aucklanders will know Alana Yee,
yes,
who's a Mega Pash Action on Instagram. Me and Alana have actually collaborated on a lot of stuff, and she taught me quite a lot of things about choreography, just, you know, here and there. So she's an incredible dancer, incredible mover. So we did all the motion capture with her, and I said to Simon, you know, you just go off, you do your essential Alana, and then so Simon has this new sort of motion capture tech that he put into this beautiful subterranean party adventure computer generated I don't know, for me the beautiful thing is that it's got this kind of like kids TV Fraggle Rock, or like this kind of
RTR really like
countdown
it.
Intro thing. But Simon totally nailed it. This kind of sort of subterranean weirdo like party zone.
It's a very joyful video to watch. I'd highly recommend anyone who hasn't seen it go check it out today. And it's awesome as well that you've got this out on vinyl. Talking about the various ways we access digital music, it's nice to have a physical thing to celebrate it on as well. If people do want to get it, Orange Milk Records, are there a few left?
Yeah, there should be. And the postage is incredibly expensive at the moment from the United States, and I do apologize.
Find a bunch of mates, collaborate on that one. It'll be, you know, treat yourselves. But what have you been working on apart from these awesome projects? You're back in Aotearoa. Have you had any sort of cool things up your sleeve that might be heading out into the world soon?
Yeah, I'm just like inching to the end of the next Eyeliner album, codenamed BRB, Be Right Back, which is kind of my Hong Kong album.
Cool.
Heaps of brass on this one, heaps of like real like nice. Snazzy. It's real snazzy, this one. This one's kind of like the whole album is mid-90s, so because I was sort of stuck in sort of semi-lockdown in Hong Kong and just, you know, walking around Kowloon and eating delicious food, and I got this kind of really sort of snazzy walking around the city, metropolitan vibes. So yeah, I've got a new Eyeliner album coming out, always working on a new Disaster Radio album. Yeah, I never stop. You know me.
Well, you're certainly a very busy person, Luke, and you've got a couple of amazing things for people to get stuck into. If anyone wants to go check out the National Library Archive, it's the Luke Rowell Archive, is that right?
Yes, the Luke Rowell Music Collection.
Cool.
It's on my Twitter feed, and it should be, if you look at my YouTube channel, all the links and all the videos to the materials are on there as well for the...
Amazing.
For both. Yep.
Well, thank you so much, Luke, for chatting with us this morning. We're going to listen to Drop Shadow now. Have a fantastic rest of your day.
So good to chat. You have a good day too.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.